This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. So good to be together. It is a beautiful spring day in the Hudson Valley. We've had thunderstorms. We've got flowers blooming. We've got sunshine. And we are here joined together to bring more love and peace and joy and light into the world. And today we're going to do it with play. When is the last time you played anything? We're going to find out how play fuels thriving people, connects communities. Play creates more resilient societies. There's something known as a play deficiency, and we don't want that. We want to get educated on play and how play unlocks human potential. That's the one that lights me up. Mia Sundstrom is our guest. MiaSundstrom.com for more. Mia is the CEO of the National Institute for Play. Welcome. I'm so happy to meet you.
Oh, Casey, I'm so happy to meet you too. I am so thrilled about this conversation. Thanks for having me.
What does the National Institute of Play do?
Oh, the National Institute for Play was founded by my grandfather. His name is Dr. Stuart Brown. And we are here to challenge global misconceptions that play is a waste of time, especially for adults. So what we do is we bridge the science of play with the practice of play to promote play as a public health necessity across the lifespan, because it's biologically hardwired into our brain. And therefore, when we're deprived of play, we can't be fully, authentically, joyfully human.
Yeah, it is hardwired into our brain. And that's something I've heard before, but I didn't really believe until I saw a picture. And it might have been through the National Institute for Play. And it was a picture of a war-torn area with children on the rubble playing a make-believe game. And that's when it hit me. This is part of the human experience, is that even when you have nothing but rocks and dirt, children will play. Explain that to me.
Oh, we can learn so much from children. Play is how we make sense of the world. It's inherent, not learned, meaning we are born knowing how to play. And it's how we learn ourselves. It's how we learn each other. And it's how we learn to interact with the world, both the really hard parts of the world and the really great parts of the world. So play is actually such a wonderful coping tool. Emotionally, it's a wonderful socialization tool. It's a cognitive growth tool, and it's a physical health tool. And so we as humans just inherently know how to play. And we pull that out in these moments that are raw and emotional when we need it the most as a way to regulate what's going on, to make sense of what's going on. And so I think that example is absolutely powerful as to see the way that play can really bring us together and help us to overcome challenges that are really, really scary sometimes.
This is bringing back a memory in my family life. There was a situation where there was a young family and they were going through turmoil. Like, you know, mom and dad were fighting and it was awful. And we weren't sure which of the kids were even tuned into what was going on. And then one of the kids came out into our space where the adults were and brought their toys. And I thought, okay, they're zoned out. They're not even listening. They're playing with their toys. Now, after listening to what you just said, how play is also a coping mechanism, I see that whole scenario completely different now.
Yeah, absolutely. They were trying to make sense of their world. And actually, that's where play therapy comes in for children quite often, is it's a really natural language and it's an ability to understand what children are feeling and thinking because they can express it through play, which is really natural to them versus through words when they may not be able to articulate it yet. And so it's a really beautiful pathway to better understanding each other. And that's true even for adults, right? Play is a universal language. It dissolves our differences. It reminds us what we have in in common, it helps us to tap into each other's rawest emotions in these moments that build attunement, which is the foundation of trust and connection, which lead to community and belonging, right? Which are fundamental to being a healthy human. And so play is really a way for us to connect. And I think especially in the world that we are in right now, which is highly polarized, we need a tool that helps to dissolve our differences and remind us what we have in common, to be able to work through conflict, not in a way that avoids it, but in a way that helps us to communicate and helps us to see the humanity in each other again.
See the humanity in each other. I want to rewind everything you just said. Tell me the part about attunement. Play gets us to attunement, mm-hmm. and that's like being on the same plane with each other.
Mm-hmm. So attunement is really powerful. It's one of the most foundational human moments. So if when an infant makes eye contact with a mother for the first time, they become attuned through that moment of eye contact, through the expression of a smile, through the shared joy, through the shared tear. It's the way that we connect with each other. And the mechanism for that is what's called mirror neurons. So we have mirror neurons, and they're unique because they light up when we observe the motor activity of another and we perform a similar activity. So literally mirroring each other, it actually connects us chemically with each other. And that's kind of what creates that foundation of attunement. And so, yeah, that attunement is sort of what I would call the seedling of connection.
I just love that. Attunement is just the greatest. That's heaven.
Yes. Correct.
It's heaven. It's heaven when two people, you know, are on the same vibe and their hearts are open. Mm-hmm. I love attunement. Attunement's my favorite. Oh, my goodness. All right. I want to put all the kids to one side right now. You know, kids in play, of course, we can get that. I want to talk about adults in play because mostly adults are listening now. We're going to go back to kids, too. But for adults, play deficiency. Talk to the moms who are busy. You know, what kind of play is sufficient? I don't think getting your eyebrows done is play, right? That's self-care. Mm-hmm. What can moms be doing to unlock this world?
Absolutely love it. Well, my answer to that starts with thinking about the consequences of play deprivation. So my grandfather got into this work by actually studying homicidal prisoners and recognizing that the one common thread amongst all of them was a lack of childhood play and thinking, wow, what's going on here with this play deprivation thing? Why is it so consequential in the extreme situations? And so what he was able to determine is that when we don't play, we're more susceptible to cognitive rigidity, to emotional dysregulation, to social incompetence, to diminished overall well-being, kind of these things that we don't really trace back to play. So we like to think of it in terms of the same sort of vein as sleeping or nutrition, right? When you don't have a good night's sleep, when you don't sleep enough, when you don't fuel your body properly, you can't be at your best. Play can have some of the similar consequences, but they take longer to take effect. And so we're not trained as a society to be like, why don't I feel good today? Maybe it's because I didn't play it. So I would say the step number one to adding more play back into your life is just to recognize that it actually is a core part of your health. And if you think of it that way, it's a lot easier to prioritize it, right? And to say, no, we have this misconception that work hard, play hard. Play is the opposite of work. What we're trying to communicate is that that's not true. Play is productive. Play is what makes work sustainable, interesting, engaging. It's what makes relationships flourish. It's what helps make you more creative so we can meet the needs of the innovation that our world is demanding right now. It combats against burnout because it sustains engagement and intrinsic motivation. So like all these core traits or strengths of character that we need most right now, play is a tool to helping us get there. So I think that that is the number one, part one to your answer is that give yourself permission to play because play is productive. So, and you'll start to sort of uncover that. The second piece is start small. We oftentimes think that if we don't have an hour, we don't have enough time to play. It's less about adding it into your schedule as a to-do list and more about transforming what's there. So think about your daily routine, the morning with your kids, when you're rushing and you're trying to get off to school and work and nobody's listening and they don't want to get out of bed. Like there's a lot of stress oftentimes around that. How can you just sprinkle in a moment of play for yourself? And it can be something as easy as taking one moment to watch the sunrise and watch the bird flying through the screen and watching that the bird is actually playing and feeling that moment with them. It can be playing your favorite song. It can be dancing for a second in the kitchen. It can be a ritual that you start with your child that's a fun handshake. It can be some moment. Like, it doesn't have to be a lot, but the more you sprinkle in those tiny little moments of play, the more likely your brain and body are going to be to remember that and then to actually just play more. So
I do that. I turn on the music and I sing in the kitchen.
I love that.
Into a spoon occasionally.
That's a great example.
Sometimes I put on full concerts for my dogs. Is the New York Times, you know, the Wordle games and all of those.
Yeah.
Is that play?
Absolutely. So I think this gets down to a really interesting question, which is, what is play? And that's actually a really hard question. There's not a perfect definition for play. And I think that's because it's this state of being that transcends our ability to describe it, right? We knew how to play before we knew how to talk, but we can sort of recognize it when we see it. Now, what the key is that play is different for everyone. It's highly individual, right? So what is play for one person might not be for the next person. An activity that is playful for you one day might not be the next day. So the internal and external environments that we're constantly shifting through sort of dictate our capacity to enter that state of play in any given moment. So I think what's interesting, you can take something like running, for example. Mm-hmm. For some people, running is play. Absolutely. For some people, running is the most dreadful activity in the whole world, and it will never be playful for them.
Right.
So what it comes down to is recognizing and then honoring each person's unique play style and what that looks like for them. And that's often rooted in what you love to do as a young child before the world told you what you should do or be, right? Was it that you loved to create imaginary worlds with your friends and you're really a dreamer and you like role play and improv and that's sort of that creative angle of play? Was it that you loved to compete, whatever that meant, bettering yourself or bettering someone else, right? So there's all these different types of play and dimensions to play and styles of play. And the reason that we try to define those at the National Institute for Play is just to give people pathways to figure out, how do I actually play? And it's okay if that looks completely different from the next person.
Wow. We are talking to Mia Sundstrom, the granddaughter of Dr. Stuart Brown, who invented the National Institute for Play. Oh my gosh. Like, I got so many things I want to share with you. One of them is I know a woman who used to be a kindergarten teacher, and she got her doctorate in I don't know what, but she is Dr. Jen Lefevre. But her whole thing was play in the classroom.
Oh,
so
yes.
When you walk past her kindergarten, if mm-hmm. you didn't understand, you thought it looked like chaos. But what it was she was allowing each child to learn through their own favorite tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she was keeping an eye on it. It was beautiful. And those kids who had Dr. Jen Lefevre in kindergarten, they still love her. It was such mm-hmm. a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a little bit of understanding of this before, and sometimes in the classroom and maybe even in the workplace, play can look unusual, but I guess we've got to get on board with that. It looks a little different, right? When you mm-hmm. fold play into your life.
Mm-hmm. It does look a little different.
Yeah. Tell me more.
I mean, it does look a little different. It's a little bit scary. It's a little bit of a risk. I grew up in a play-based learning environment too. I was the kid that could not sit still to save my life. And my grandpa identified that and was like, yikes, she's not going to do well in a traditional learning environment. And so my parents took a little bit of a risk and they put me in a play-based learning school where I didn't have grades, or I could learn science outdoors, or I could bounce on a ball while I was learning to read. Things that helped to nurture sort of my unique movement-based play personality versus penalize it. And I credit that with an ability to learn and a love of learning and a growth and a curiosity, right? That was an environment that helped me to flourish. And so, but it looked really different. And my parents did feel like it was a risk. It's not the normal pathway. And it's because our society tells us that it's all about the outcome related achievements and that, you know, more production, more consumption, that's what defines success, and busyness is success. And we got to prepare kids for the world that we've created. And I think it's a paradox, right? Because what we think of is play as a break for when the serious work is done. But play actually is learning. right? Play helps us retain better memory. It helps with skill acquisition and can lead us towards mastery because it's super intrinsically motivated. All these things that actually help us to get where we're trying to go, play does, but it's really unconventional. And it's hard because we're working in the social science, so we're not able to isolate a variable. And there are stats floating out there that, you know, you learn 10 times better through play. I'm not going to claim that. We don't know. It's highly individual, right? But what we do know is that it's very paradoxical, that play is not a break. It actually helps us to get where we're trying to go. And so again, it all starts with this mindset shift of understanding the role of play so that we know where to implement it. Because as soon as we think of play as learning, I think it's so fun for teachers, like the one you just mentioned, to be like, okay, I have the permission to turn math into a game because it will actually help them learn. And it's okay if they're a little rambunctious, and it's okay if the energy gets a little high, and it's okay if it's a little bit riskier or there's even rough and tumble elements, because that's what teaches them the boundaries on their own, right? And helps them to take those risks and learn from their mistakes in an environment that's safe, that doesn't beat down their confidence. So I think there's a lot there, and I am a huge fan of all of the educators around the world that I have seen truly harness play in the classroom, not as a break from learning, but as a form of learning. Yes. And there are some just miraculous examples of ways that you can do that, whether it's through role play or challenge or imagination, or, I mean, it's just amazing. Gamification, like there's so many different ways to do it. And so, yeah, it's really unique. And I love that you have a great example of that.
Great example. And she was, you know, always singled out like, oh, like what's going on in her room? Right. Well, you know, kids were learning. That was, that's, and they were happy.
And they were, and they'll remember it for the rest of their lives. It's memorable.
Yeah. Memorable. Absolutely. Mia Sundstrom is our guest. She is the CEO of the National Institute of Play. So is this like everybody in your family has to work there or what?
We do have an awesome three generation moment right now that we're absolutely cherishing. So yes, my grandpa, he's just turned 93. So he is still kicking it. He still plays every day. I think that's a huge part of his longevity. And then my mother, is his youngest daughter, is also working for the National Institute for Play. And so am I. So it's really fun to have three generations right now who are part of this pursuit. And I think the reason that that happened is because we all experienced the power of play in our own lives and then recognized that we were in a position to be able to help other people understand and embrace play in a way that can transform theirs too.
Tell me about that. Tell me some stories about experiences that you've had, people that you've met who have been transformed through play.
Oh, that's a great question. So this is actually a really recent story. We had someone, and I love when this happens, we have folks who will write in to our inquiries email with a story about how play has transformed their life. And this particular man wrote in and said that he was having a really hard time in his life, and he was struggling with alcoholism, and he just wasn't happy, and he felt lost and lonely. And he decided one morning to take a different route to work because he just wanted to change things up and just do anything to just like shake himself out of where he was going. And he took this different route, and he ended up on a hill of this like grassy hill, and he actually tripped and rolled down the hill, fell all the way down the hill, and got to the bottom, paused for a second, and just erupted in laughter.
Yeah.
And he said it was the first time he had laughed in a really long time. And that one little moment, which was completely accidental, spontaneous, not even trying to play, was a fall, right? That change, that moment, that spark of what he experienced within his body, within his mind, within his being, changed the entire trajectory. And it was the step that he needed to try and get clean. It was the step that he needed to think about where he wanted to be in his life, to reconnect with old friends, all of these little moments. And that spark happened with less than 30 seconds of accidental play. And so that's just one recent example of someone's life being transformed through play. But there are so, so many. And I think a lot of it comes down to adults who have lost touch with their unique play style and then have rediscovered it in some meaningful way when they need it most.
Mm-hmm. Play unlocks human potential. When that guy rolled down the hill, some part of his being remembered being a kid rolling down the hill, and he could see another way of life, right? He could see a lighter way of being. That's just beautiful. Yeah. I'm thinking snow angels. We had the worst winter here in New York, or the best winter, depending on how you look at it. But snow angels in a snowstorm. Hopscotch when you're walking down the sidewalk and, you know, some kid left it behind. All the little things that we could do and not leave behind. You know, there's so many things you do have to leave behind as you grow older in life, but you don't have to leave play behind.
No, no.
At Let It Shine and the Shine On podcast, we do twice a year women's retreats, and they are play-centric. Yes. It's all about not taking your life seriously, turning down the volume on your story, getting together and doing a craft or singing a song or or line dancing or whatever happens to break out in the room. And we have one woman who comes to speak every now and then, and the first thing she does as an icebreaker, her name is Mary Ellen O'Brien, just want to give her a shout-out. She'll go around the room and ask the women, when you were a kid and you were going to the playground, what were you going to hit first? The swings, the slide, the monkey bars, that thing that goes round and round, like which one called to your heart? And it's amazing. You see these women just transform before your eyes with the memory of play, you know? And then they're high-fiving, yeah, I'm a swings girl. Yeah, I'm a slide girl. You know, like, I don't know. That's the primal part of it.
Exactly. Exactly. I love that story. And yeah, it's just this way for us to tap back into that feeling that we often lose, right? And on a neurological level, like this is where the science comes in. It's like when we're in that state of play, it calms our amygdala. Like our stress response is less reactive. We're less emotionally defensive. Like it takes us out of this state that we almost aren't aware that we're in so constantly and brings us back down to this grounded, centered place where we're able to see things for what they are, where we're able to understand ourselves and our values better and each other better, right? So it's just like this, like, I just think it's just this secret power that secret we all possess, but we just don't think of it as a power, but it really is. It's a secret power. And I love what you brought up too about the hopscotch, and because all of these are just moments in our lives that are already there, right? That we're just transforming. That's the key. And what's great about this is as soon as you start, your brain and body will help you continue. So it might take a little bit, like you might not, as you're walking down the street right now and see a hopscotch, naturally want to do it because you haven't played in a while. Right. But as soon as you do it once, twice, three times, it actually becomes a habit because play is self-reinforcing. Right. And so all you have to do is just cue your brain and your body into one or two experiences. And all of a sudden, it's going to get a lot easier. Yeah. So that's a lot of the power of making play a habit is once we start, it actually does stick.
Wow. So get out the softball and go have a catch in the backyard, or get out a jump rope and see if you can remember how to do that, or the pogo stick in the garage or the bicycle. Me, myself, I play a little too much. I have chickens.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
As you can see all over my t-shirt, I have chickens and they just make me laugh every day, and we play every day. And this has been so great. So you are Mia Sundstrom, MiaSundstrom.com, CEO, National Institute of Play. You're coming from Denver, Colorado to Westchester. Tell everybody why.
Oh, I am so excited about the trip to Westchester. Patricia had reached out to me and I am like absolutely thrilled that there's an entire conference centered around play that will give educators and practitioners and therapists continuing education credits to engage in the science of play, to play themselves, to come together as a community. This is exactly the type of conference that I love to be a part of and that I'm so thrilled about. So I will be there. We'll be diving into the neuroscience of play. We'll be taking our play histories to understand how we like to play. We'll be discussing what play looks like in the workplace and in the world and why we need it right now. And it's going to be interactive. It's going to be fun. I'm just absolutely thrilled for that opportunity.
And that's at the Windrose in Ossining on Monday, April 27th. Contact the Westchester Library System for more information. I have had so much fun playing with you, Mia Sundstrom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Casey. This has been such a fun conversation.
And tell everybody how to find you and your mom and your grandpa.
Yeah. So we are on LinkedIn and Instagram at the National Institute for Play and the Play Institute on Instagram. Our website is currently under construction, but it's nifplay.org. And then we actually just opened up a brand new storefront where one of the biggest questions we get is, now I understand why play is important, but I don't know how to actually do it. So we created a 90-day guided reflection and practice journal.
Wow.
That's physical, that is about how to incorporate play as a habit in your life. It takes 1 to 2 minutes a day. It's super fun and easy. And we actually launched it last week.
So
we're in the early stages. It's on a discount right now. You can find that at nifplaystore.org. And so we are really thrilled about that as just a way to kind of bridge the science with the practice to actually help transform play.
NIFplaystore.org.
Yep. Yep. Very and it's cool. Called the Live Playfully Journal. And so we're definitely seeking feedback on it right now if anyone's interested.
I'm going to get that. Nia, I have to ask this before I let you go. What are you going to do for play today?
That is such a great question. So I'm a mover. That's my play style. And I get to swim on Wednesdays with my friends. I have this awesome swim group and we have so much fun. It's half social. It's half play. We mix up our strokes. We play different games with each other. So every lunch on a Wednesday, even when I don't feel like I have time because the work is always there, I always block that time for myself and for my play.
Mia Sundstrom, the National Institute for Play. She walks her talk. So great to see you. I'll see you in Westchester on the 27th.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me.